The following is an unrehearsed interview with Reverend Edward Kaufman by John Landis for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted in Russellville, Kentucky on June 12, 1978.
Yeah, Dad had very pleasant year time at that time. He didn't have to go as long as your sister does. She has to get 3 years, and uh-huh. In the old days, they would give them a bachelor's degree in 1 year.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you get connected, why, do you want to make an introductory statement, or do you want me just to start out? And
okay, well, I could say that this is an interview with Reverend Edward Kaufman in Russellville, Kentucky, and today is June the 12th, 1978. I guess that'll do.
Well, we are interested in histories.
What would really interest me most of all, and apparently we can. In these interviews, so it's your own history is what I thought was most interesting in your autobiography, the story of your life and the experiences that you've had as a minister in Russellville over the last many years.
Well, let's talk.
Terribly interesting.
Yes, sir. Let's talk first about history. Logan County has had two historians and two histories. The first history of the county was that of Alec Finley, written about 1878 mm-hmm. and published in a paperback volume. I think an addition was made to it about 1890. But we may date Finley's history from 1878 till about 1890. Alec Finley was a printer. He was not highly educated. He was not a good writer. But his facts are pertinent and fine and accurate. And it has been said that Mr. Finley's writings were almost as good as order book number one of the Logan County Court. Now, the second history is my history. Mm-hmm. In 1931, I wrote a series of articles in the News Democrat, a paper of Russellville, Kentucky, in 17 installments. I used it as part of my work for a master's degree at Vanderbilt University. It was published in 17 installments and then made into a paper-backed volume. That was in 1931. As the years went by, I had not thought too much of enlarging on it, but I did in 1962. In 1962, I wrote a complete history of Logan County. The story of Logan County. It was published by the Parthenon Press of Nashville. I had 800 copies printed. It sold for $5 a copy. It was printed and came to us in November 1962. And we sold it at our home here. And for a month or 6 weeks, the house was crowded from day to day. Whites and black people in their working clothes came to get volumes. It was also on sale at the newspaper office and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It sold readily. The cost was $3,400, and I was able to make the $3,400 and several hundred over. That was in 1962. Mm-hmm. Now, I was anxious then to have a second edition, but I, at my age, as I had advanced in age, my wife and I did not feel like the trouble of selling the book. But in 1975, Mrs. Joan L. Davis, a worker at the Logan County Library here in Russellville, offered to help me sell it. I was to pay for the printing, and she was to sell it, and then we were to divide any profit. It came to us at Christmas 1975 and sold very rapidly. We had about 700 copies printed. Then on May the 28th, 1976, Mrs. Joan L. Davis was starting to Bowling Green to a class she was doing at Western State University. Had an automobile wreck about 3 miles east of Russellville and was killed. So Mrs. Kaufman and I did not feel that we cared to try to sell the book again. So the Logan County Library was considerate and kind enough to agree to leave the book there and to sell it. And it is selling very well. We don't care how fast or how slowly it sells. But we have several hundred copies left there, and it is selling continually. We have sales every month. Now, Mr. Landis asked me something about it that you would be interested in.
Well, you have an interest in history. Were you trained in colleges as a historian? Was your major in history?
No, it was not. No, I really majored in Latin, was what I did. I had my A.B. degree from Bethel College. Back in the old days, we had two small colleges here in Russellville. Bethel College was a Baptist college for men, and Logan College was a college for a female college for girls, Logan Female College it was. Mm-hmm. Well, I graduated from Bethel College in 1910. I was in the Postal Service. I was postmaster here at Russellville from 1919 to 1928. In 1927, I decided to enter the ministry and was called to be pastor of the Russellville Christian Church. I served as such for 10 years, from 1927 until 1937. It became necessary then for me to do some more work, so I went to Vanderbilt University for 3 years, and in 1930 received a Master of Arts degree from Vanderbilt, and in 1931, the Bachelor of Divinity degree. Mm-hmm. So that is my training. Mm-hmm. Then in 1964, 2 years after I had written the history, I made a short autobiography, which I termed Happy Years, really the story of our family life in the years that have passed.
I'd be kind of interested in knowing what life was like at the Bethel College at the time you attended it.
Bethel College was very fine, a very small school, possibly not over 200 students, but they came from West Kentucky, Tennessee. There were usually a number of Mississippi students, boys coming just south of Memphis in northern Mississippi. There were some would come up from Texas. In the year in which I graduated, 1910, one of my classmates was from Kansas, and they did an excellent grade of work. They had a preparatory department of 4 years, which is about equal to our present high school work, and then 4 years of college work. They did a nice work. There were four fraternities. I was a member of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity. The Phi Gamma Delta had a chapter here. Sigma Nu had a chapter. Kappa Alpha had a chapter.
What kinds of activities did the fraternity
engage in? Their football began in 1892, and the first intercollegiate games were in 1893. They played colleges and universities in Kentucky and Tennessee. Then when basketball came in some years later, they had basketball, they had baseball, they had a large field, athletic field, and had a track meet each year. Then the social activities were receptions and things of that kind. There were two literary societies, the Philomathian and the Neotropion. They had weekly programs, and the colleges did an excellent grade of work. I'm very proud of it.
Were you an athlete?
No, I was too small. 1 year I made a substitute on the football team, but I never got to play in any games. I simply played in the practice session.
And there were the two literary societies. Which one were you in?
I was in the Philomathian Literary Society.
Were you a debater?
Well, not especially, no. We did have debates, of course. That was quite a part of the work. I never did consider myself too good a debater.
Well, let's see. Well, can we go back a little bit to to your earliest school? That was the Rutherford School?
Yes, Miss Rutherford School.
Miss Rutherford School.
Miss Rutherford School. I attended Miss Rutherford School. I was born in 1890, and I started the school at Miss Rutherford's and did about 4 years there, and then I was able to get into the preparatory department, Bethel College. I entered Bethel College in 1902, and after the 4 years of preparatory work and 4 years of college work, majoring in Latin, I graduated in 1910. I took quite a bit of Latin in those days, took some Greek, took French, took German, and I believe they were the only, I'm not sure whether I took French or not, I know I took German.
That was a demanding curriculum.
Well, yes and no, too. It was a very pleasant curriculum. If you were interested in studying and wanted to be a good student, it was very easy to be.
So your education was not typical of most people's in this area?
Oh, I think it was. I think it was rather typical of it.
Were there public schools in that time? You went to private schools.
Yes, I went. There were a number of private schools here in Russellville. There was a public school in Russellville for many years, from the middle of the 19th century on until the year 1908. In 1908, a new building was made in which the school to which the school was transferred. They had an excellent school here, but it was only a graded school, and the high school in Russellville began in 1923. And the two colleges continued. Bethel College continued until 1933, and Logan College until 1931. the Prussian years killed both. Mm. Mm-hmm. They were not able to raise enough money to carry on during those years of depression.
Well, let's see. Did you live at home while you...
Yes, I did. Yes, this is my home. I was born here on 106 West 7 and lived here until after I was married.
Mm-hmm. The Bethel College did not have dormitories at that time?
Oh, yes, they had an excellent dormitory. It took care of the student. They had two dormitories, really. The college was about three blocks on what is known as Bethel Street. There was the main building, the educational building. The fraternities had their rooms in the third floor of the main building. There were two dormitories. In Long Hall was one, and then there was a new dormitory, the Bethel Dormitory. Then there was the President's House, a well-constructed building. Then there was a joint building for the library and the gymnasium, the library in front and the gymnasium behind. And then there was a large athletic field. In later years, shortly after 1900, there was a donation that enabled the college to build 16 small houses to take care of the ministerial students. Mm-hmm. There were always a number of ministerial students in Bethel College. And this section of the college grounds with 16 buildings was used to take care of the ministerial students and their families. And the two dormitories took care of the others very well.
Mm-hmm. Was there an emphasis on religious training?
Very much, yes, very much.
The courses, they would have offered courses in the Old Testament and New Testament, and courses do you recall?
I recall the language courses, the Latin, Greek, and the German. Mm-hmm. And then we had several courses in English. I had Dr. Charles Massey Long, PhD, was my teacher in an English course, which was very helpful to me, and I remember well. We had courses in history. We had good courses in mathematics. We had a science department in which we did nice work along the scientific line. In fact, Bethel College was an excellent institution of learning according to my ideas.
Mm-hmm. Did they require chapel meetings?
Oh yes, we had a large chapel. And we had chapel each morning. We met about 8:30 for chapel and had about a 30-minute chapel, and then the classes began. Mm-hmm. There were always a number of ministerial students training for the Baptist ministry, and of course they gave it a religious atmosphere in a way. It was not overly religious atmosphere, but it was a very excellent one.
Uh-huh. And let's see, when you graduated in 1910, and you worked for a while as a stenographer, is that right, for a coal company?
Yes, my first work from 1911 to 1912 was a stenographer for the Crescent Coal Company at Bevier, Kentucky. Then in 1912, in April, my father, who was postmaster at that time, became ill. And I returned to Russellville and served as a clerk in the post office.
But what were your duties as a postal clerk?
Well, just the duties of a post office to wait on the window, the general delivery window, the money order window. We wrote money orders and then dispatched mail. The mail came in and we had to assort it and dispatch it into the different sections. And when the mail came in, we had to open the bags and distribute the packages and the letters to the mail carriers to be delivered. Mm-hmm. When my dad died in November 1912, I was appointed postmaster and served as such until June 1913. I then resumed my work as clerk in the office. Then in 1919, as a result of the civil service examination in which I rated first, I was appointed postmaster and served as such until 1928, at the time I was entering the ministry.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Was the post office in those days sort of a gathering place for local people? Was it a place for people to come and mingle?
Not too much. We had delivery of mail here in the town beginning in 1913. And they, of course, a number of people had post office boxes and came to pick up their mail. And as such, they greeted each other, but it was not a special meeting place.
Was it a place to chat and
no,
talk politics?
No, not at all that.
Huh. Well, what prompted you to go into the ministry?
Well, I, in a way, felt that I was called into the ministry. I joined the church in 1905. And from my early years, I felt that I should be glad to be a minister if I could work it out. And then, as things turned out, I became involved in the Postal Service, but I always had a desire to become a minister. And it brought forth fruit in 1927 when I actually entered the ministry.
You were baptized in
1905.
What was that event like? Was it a total immersion?
Yes, Christian
Church.
Do
you recall the day?
I recall it perfectly. We were having a series of revival meetings at our church, and beginning on the 15th of November, 1905, that was on Wednesday. Mr. W.H. Hudspeth was the preacher. We had services each evening, and he did the preaching. It started on Wednesday. On Friday night, there was a musical show at the Opera House. We had a good opera house here and had good shows to come in for a small town. Cinderella was on, and I was anxious to go, and I went, but I felt a sort of sense of guilt at leaving the meeting. But I came back on Saturday night and Sunday night and Monday night, and then on Tuesday night, after the minister made an excellent sermon, I went forward and made my confession of faith that I believed that Jesus was Christ, the Son of the living God. Then on Thursday, 2 days later, I was immersed. At that, all of our Christian churches now are well equipped with baptistries. But at that time, we had no baptistry. And I was immersed in the Rock Crusher Pond on the north side of Russellville. It was before the days of automobiles, so we had to drive out, my family and I, in a hack. Mr. Bill Cooper ran a hack service here, You could get a closed vehicle with two seats driven by two horses for 25 cents. Mr. Cooper took me and mother and dad and grandmother out to the pond, and on the 23rd day of November 1905, I was immersed by Mr. Hudspeth in the Rock Crusher Pond. Of course, it was I was pretty wet, and my mother carried along a blanket to wrap me with until I could get back home and change my clothes.
November would have been
quite cold. Yeah.
What did the baptism? What was the significance of baptism in your life? How did it change your life?
Well, we in the Christian Church accept baptism simply as a command to be baptized, and it's just simply a part of our entrance into the Christian life.
Mm-hmm. Did your life change then, after that?
Well, I hope that it improved. I was not aware of any mysterious change of any kind. I had no mysterious experience, but I was very, very happy as a Christian and felt that I wanted to dedicate my life to good service, and I was hoping that possibly someday I might be a minister.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see, then you entered the ministry in 1927.
Yeah.
Now, prior to that, you had had no formal theological training.
That's right.
But after that, you went to Vanderbilt. In, let's see, in 1928 then, you went to Vanderbilt?
Yeah, 1928 to 31, I received the two customary degrees, Master of Arts and Bachelor of Divinity. I never did receive a doctorate in the ministry. They also give a doctor of ministry, but I did not. They were not giving that at the time, and I did not take a doctorate. I had the Bachelor of Divinity and the Master of Arts degree.
What do you recall from your days at Vanderbilt? Which courses did you find were most exciting or interesting?
Oh, I enjoyed them all. We had courses in, we had Old Testament, we studied Old Testament, we studied New Testament, we studied our ministerial work, and it was just a most excellent time. My Vanderbilt years were very, very happy years. My wife went with me two of the years in which I went, and she took work in the university and completed two full years with A and B grades in all the subjects she took. And I was fortunate enough to receive the Founders Medal as having the best grade of any of the graduate in a divinity school in the year in which I graduated.
Did you feel that your theological training at Vanderbilt then benefited your day-to-day activities as a minister when you came back to Russellville?
Oh yes, I felt like it, and I felt that all ministers should have the proper training, and I felt that I had it, and I was very pleased that I went. My years at Vanderbilt were a wonderful adventure to me.
Now that would have been right in the middle of the Depression.
Exactly.
Was it hard to swing, to finance?
Oh, quite. I don't know how I did it. I made it on very close terms, but the university was very nice in scholarships and in help, And with a small amount of my remuneration as a pastor, I was able to complete my work and got my degree, and I love Vanderbilt greatly.
Mm-hmm. You're a loyal alumni.
Yes, indeed.
Your father was a lawyer, and he ran for office. Is that right?
Yes. Well, he ran for office, but he was appointed postmaster. He was postmaster from 1898 till his death in 1912. At one time, he served as a member of the Kentucky State Legislature, and he also ran for office as county attorney, but was defeated, and ran for county judge, but was defeated. He was a loyal Republican, as I am, and the county in which we live is about 2-1 Democratic. So we feel that we have thousands of loyal, good friends.
No, I tried to call her today, but she wasn't home.
Well, Rena is fine. Rena taught in Union College over Bobbleville, Kentucky, all her life. And she's mm-hmm. come back to us, yes, several years ago, and she's quite interested in her oral history and other things. And we are very, very pleased. Now, I haven't told you about our historians yet. Hmm. There are three of us. Uh-huh. Have you heard of Maybelle Morton? Maybelle Morton is in her 80s. She is an old maid. She's an unmarried mm-hmm. person. She's a very, very fine person. She is just lives on history. She's got all kind of, made all kind of research and got all kind of papers and all. She lives about 4 miles out on the road toward Bowling Green. Now, Maybelle Morton is one of your historians. The second historian is Velma Vick. Mrs. Velma Vick. She is an old lady. She is a widow. She excels in genealogy. She has the county records of all the prominent people in the county. You can just talk mm-hmm. to her a few minutes and she'll tell you anything about anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, she is in her latter years. She's in very poor health. You can hardly understand her when you talk to her. I know you want to contact Mrs. Mm-hmm. Velma Vick, uh-huh. but you're going to find her very hard to talk to, but she is a wonderful person whom I admire and respect very much. Now, we are your three, Maybelle Morton, Velma Vick, and Edward Copeland.
Well, that's great. I'm hoping to recruit some people to use the tape recorder. And you see, the state has put a tape recorder in each county library for the purpose of collecting oral history. And one of my jobs this summer is to encourage or recruit somebody to use the tape recorder and do some interviews.
You will find two or three tapings that I made in my early years in Russellville, right there in the library that Rena made. And you will find, of course, the story of Logan County. They have three or four volumes for distribution, and then they sell it. But sale had nothing to do with it. It's in the library and anybody can get it. Then they have one or more copies of the story of Logan County, the paperback volume. And they also have Alec Finley's complete history. You know, what do you call that where you make a picture of it and reprint it? They have that. They have a volume of all that Alex Finley wrote. And Alex Finley and I are the only people who have published books. I'll have to amend that, correct that just a little bit. I think maybe some of the women, some of the club maybe wrote a paper-bound volume maybe of the county, but Mr. Finley and I are really the only two historians, and you will find his work there, they have everything. We have an excellent library here, and they took care of it, and Evelyn Richardson called me in and made me acquainted with you. I wanted to tell you, back in about World War I, we had a man here who may have had your same name. We called him Squire Lands, B.D. Land, L.A.N.D., but I think it was very likely L.A.N.D.I.S. But he was known as Squire Lands. He was a very much respected farmer, living about 4 miles south of town. He was quite interested in church work and was a very fine person. And I rather suspect that he has the same name as you do. You're probably not connected in that
way. Well, our name is spelled with an E-S instead of I-S. L-A-N-D-E-S.
E-S, Landis. Did you hear that thunder?
Yeah, it's supposed to rain this afternoon.
Yes.
But that'll be good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Are you in your car?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Parked right across the street from you. Your family is they're all Republicans, and I recall from your book that you were a delegate to a Republican convention.
Not a delegate. I was simply an attendant in 1908. Uh-huh. I went with the delegate. Mr. Hezekiah Brister was a Republican delegate, and I went up with him to Chicago and had a nice visit to the big city in 1908.
That must have been really exciting. You actually went to the convention?
Attended the convention. Went to White City. White City was the big amusement center. Went to Comiskey Park and saw the
White Sox.
White Sox played baseball. Just had a big time.
Were the conventions in those days pretty much pandemonium like they are today?
Yes, they're not quite as much possibly, but they were. Lots of marching and cheering and singing and all. Oh yes, they had those things.
Well, who were the contenders?
William Howard Taft was the president, and he was re-nominated. And, 1908, I think. Theodore Roosevelt was president, and William Howard Taft was nominated. And I don't recall the people who were the other candidates, because he was favored by the president and had everything his way. And it was an easy victory for William Howard Taft. Now, what is your church membership?
I was Episcopalian. I was brought up as an Episcopalian.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Well, we have some very close friends. My mother's sister, my aunt was Episcopalian, and my wife's people, another uncle was an Episcopalian. We have a lovely little Trinity Church right here on this block. Have you ever seen it? Right down here on the corner of Main Street and 6. And
The denominations in this community would mainly have been the Christian Church, the Baptist Church, and the Methodist.
The Baptist Church, as usual, is a strong one, and the Methodist. Then the other church, well, the Presbyterian Church, the Christian Church, the Catholic Church, and in those days, that was before we had so many of the other branch groups, you know, the holiness people and all. When I was a boy, on Sunday morning, the bells would ring. Well, you may have read that in the book. And just, we heard the bells of all the churches, stately Methodist and Baptist bells, and the little bells in the Christian church and the Catholic church, saying, get busy, get busy. And they...
Is that what it really sounded to like to you?
And the Episcopal Church, they have bells right there on our same block with us. It's very steady, and they still have a bell. So many of the churches have done away with the bells. But, and you will find that a great many people in other churches are immersed in baptism. A great many Methodist ministers have been immersed. Of course, the Baptist Church practices immersion altogether. And
let's see. Yeah, you know, I was thinking that, let's see, 1920, I mean, you mentioned William Jennings Bryan in several of your, in several places in the book. I think you saw him speak at one time.
Oh yeah, he came in and spoke to the students at Bethel College. He spoke in the Opera House. We had the students go down to the Opera House and William Jennings Bryan spoke. I can well remember his first sentence. I am glad to speak to the students of a little college. I went to a little college. That was William Jennings Bryan. Yes, I heard William Jennings Bryan speak. And Theodore Roosevelt came here and spoke. And I heard Franklin D. Roosevelt speak here from a train. A train went through and he just spoke from the train. He didn't get off.
Now, you were in the ministry in the 20s. The reason I was wondering about William Jennings Bryan, because he would have been involved in the Scopes trial.
Yeah, that was about 1925.
And you would have been greatly interested in that.
Oh, yes, I was greatly interested in that. Though I never did hear Bryan speak in those latter years. I heard him speak in the earlier years. You see, he ran in 1896 against McKinley, and he ran in 1900. Then he didn't run again until 1908. He was the Democratic candidate the year that Taft was elected. My people were farmers. My grandfather was, and my great-grandfather. They owned a farm here 6 miles south of town. And my grandfather was an early Republican from the time the Republican Party started in 1856, right on down until he died in 1902. And then my dad was a leader in the Republican Party here in the county through all the years of his life, and then I guess it was very natural that I should follow suit and become and be a Republican too. Now I married a good old good old Democrat. My wife came from a strong Democratic Party. Her father was a Democratic office holder. He was a jailer here in Logan County at one time. And my wife was a good member of the Baptist Church. But after we married, she decided to come to the Christian Church. And she said, not because of me, but because her conviction changed and she wanted to become a member of the Christian Church. And she is a very loyal member of the Christian Church now. And we continue to be church workers. Our minister at the Christian Church here was away for two Sundays, 28th of May and the 4th of June, and I preached on the 28th of May. Fine as I am, I can get up in the sanctuary and they can all hear me, so it does very well. I enjoy it once in a while.
Do you recall what your first sermon was?
Well, I don't know that I do. I don't know that I recall that. I think I had a sermon entitled The Whole Counsel of God, and that may be what I used in my first sermon. At the time I entered the ministry, I was also president of the Russell Rotary Club, and on the first Sunday evening, the members of the Rotary Club came to attend the service and hear me preach. That was when I entered the ministry in 1927. In later years, I have become a member of the Kiwanis Club, and I enjoy that very much.
What did the Rotary Club do in those days, in the 20s?
Well, it was just a service club meeting. It was organized here in 1923 and has continued a very strong club ever since. And they had certain charitable projects and all, different ones, different times. They've continued through the years. But they're really just a service club and have programs each week.
We go back for a minute to William Jennings Bryan, and this, I wonder what the reaction among the ministers, you know, the clergy in this community was. What was the reaction to the Scopes trial at that time? It would have been a terribly exciting issue, wasn't it?
So much. No, I don't think it was so exciting, but I think they were all rather on the Bryan side, I believe, most of the ministers at that time.
They would have been on the Bryan
yes.
side. Let's see. You mentioned that you had, in the book, that you went to the St. Louis World's Fair.
Yes, in 1904.
1904.
What? My mother took me. I was then 13 years old, and we went to the St. Louis Fair and enjoyed it very much. Meet me in St. Louis, Louis, meet me at the fair. Anywhere the lights are burning, tell them I'll be there. I remember that was my first automobile ride. We never had any automobiles here in Russellville till about the year 1906. I remember seeing the first one go up 6th Street. I climbed a fence down there to watch it. But in 1904, I rode in an automobile at St. Louis. Also, there was a detachment of Philippine soldiers there who were excellently drilled. And I remembered admiring them very much as they drilled. And the fair was just an ordinary fair, like so many of them, like we saw in New York and Chicago and all in later years.
Well, the World's Fair is usually a sort of a, they demonstrate new inventions.
Yes.
I wonder what the great new inventions of 1904 were.
Well, I ought to know. Of course, the automobiles were new, but they were not demonstrated greatly at the fair, but it was an excellent fair.
Well, let's see. I wanted to ask you about the Kentucky Derby. You went to several of the early Kentucky Derby.
Yes, I was at the Kentucky Derby in the year 1913. That was famous because of the fact that Donnie Rail was the winner. The odds in that race were 91 to 1. Each $2 ticket paid $184.
Uh-huh.
And each $5 ticket paid about $450.
Mm-hmm.
I had no winning ticket though at that time.
Uh-huh.
But I was there in 1914 when Old Rosebud won. But I haven't attended the Derby lately. I think it's better just to watch them. I have watched the Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont very closely. Of course, I can't see it with my eyes, but I can hear it with my ears.
Uh-huh.
And really, I can get know more of what was going on by hearing it on television than I could by being in the grandstand and watching it.
Uh-huh. This last Belmont was really exciting.
Oh, it was.
Very close.
That Firm's a wonderful horse, and that jockey is amazing.
Yeah.
He's from our little town of Walton, Kentucky, and we're quite proud of him.
Have you ever heard of a jockey, such a young jockey, winning? So
No, I don't know that I have. I think that's really quite unusual. Of course, we Kentuckians would like to have seen the Calumet Farm entry win, but I'm just really quite greatly admire Fern. I think he's a wonderful horse, and I think the jockey did a grand job.
What kinds of kind of entertainment was there here in Russellville in your youth? You mentioned the Opera House.
The Opera House was built in 1904 and ran for about 10 years. A small town, of course, doesn't get too big shows, but we were on a circuit with Owensboro and Princeton and some other towns maybe. And we got some pretty rotten shows, but some pretty good shows.
Mm-hmm.
Then in about 1910 and 12, the moving pictures came in. And what happened was the moving pictures destroyed the stage shows entirely. The stage shows played out here about 10 years after 1904,
mm-hmm.
because people were going to the picture show. In 1912, Arthur Mitchell came to Russellville and installed a picture show. And he was the picture show man here, the principal picture show man, until he died in 1953. So that was what happened. I remember selling tickets at the old Opera House, and we boys liked to get jobs selling tickets or ushering. And we had an excellent Opera House. It was well built, had box seats, and very comfortable and all for the people. And then the dressing rooms were so nice, they were under the stage, and we had an excellent Opera House for a small town. And then, of course, we had baseball. In 1908, we had a wonderful baseball team. We brought in some outside players, and we had a wonderful record that year. We
professional team?
Yes. Oh, yeah, professional that year. Of course, many years they were just not professional, just interested players.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the college always brought football here. Bethel College had football. And they played the teams around here, Union University of Jackson and They played the University of Nashville and Cumberland University at Lebanon. They had a game or two against Vanderbilt back in the old days. They played Swanee. But football was always on, and then the girls played basketball. They had a great basketball game. Mm-hmm. And the small town parties and social events were just what were usual, I suppose, in a small town outside. How large is your town of Danville?
About 50,000.
Oh, you're a big city. Mm-hmm. See, we were always very small here.
The kind of dancing was there in those days?
What's that?
What kind of dancing was there?
Well, just the regular dancing. Let me see now. Let my memory work just a little bit. When you get old, you forget. In 1915, there was a dancer who installed a lot of new dances in the country, and one of his people who knew how it came, and we had a dance club here. My wife and I belonged to it.
This is the Vernon and Irene Castle?
Oh, Vernon and Irene Castle. I couldn't say it. Vernon and Irene Castle were the big ones, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Fred and Ginger Rogers.
Fred Astaire.
Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, you know. Fred Astaire, the most perfect dancer I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, our people just dance all the current dances. The foxtrot and all the current things, they did all those things.
Were there local orchestras?
Yes,
and music?
Yeah. And we had a number of card clubs. Card playing was always very fine in a small town. And just before I entered the ministry, my wife and I belonged to a young people's card club. We had a number of 12 couples or so, and we met once a month at their homes and played bridge, and I enjoyed it very much.
Let's see. When were you married?
Married 1916, 18th of October, 1916.
What was the ceremony like? In a church, a large wedding?
It was at home. We were married at my wife's home out on 2nd Street. She was a member of the Baptist Church. Her minister had the service. We have always wanted what we call the Episcopal wedding service. I've never used anything else. Archbishop Cranmer wrote it in his days, and nobody can improve on it according to my idea. Uh-huh. I've never used anything else but the regular church service. And we asked the minister to use that service, which he did. Uh-huh. We just had it very simple in the living room, uh-huh, in my wife's home, her family, her two aunts and uncle, and her sister and husband and my mother, and a select group of 8 or 10, 12 friends probably. And then my wife and I, we had our wedding service at 7 o'clock, and we went down and caught the 9 o'clock train and went over to Cincinnati the next morning for breakfast, and we went on to Detroit, and we went on to Buffalo, and I was a great admirer of Albert Hubbard. We went to East Aurora.
Who was Albert Hubbard?
Albert Hubbard? Mm-hmm. Oh, he was a great writer. He was a Buffalo businessman, and he did some great writing back in the early years in the 1900s. and I admired him greatly. He had a hotel at East Aurora, and we visited there. Mm-hmm. That was in October 1916.
Hmm. That would have been, World War I would have begun in Europe.
What's that?
World War I would have been, that would have been, I guess, in the middle of World War I. 1916?
No. Oh, yes, it was in Europe. Yes, it began in 1914. Yeah. And then, of course, we didn't get into it until 1917. I was already married when I applied for the ministers, for the officers' training camp. But I didn't get in, the war closed, and then but I'm able to get to be a chaplain.
Huh. How was the community here affected by World War I? Is there did the way of life change at all?
Not too much, of course. There were only 2 years, 1917 and 1918, and they were years of effort and all to do all we could to win the war, but I don't think there were any great changes in the lives of the people.
You hear about, anti-German feeling where they change the name of, change sauerkraut to Liberty Cabbage.
Yeah, we didn't do any of that. Yeah. Well, you about got it, haven't you? Or is there anything else I can help?
actually, there's a lot more I'd like to talk with you about, but we can do it another day if, if you're tired and,
go ahead and talk, but I think
we've been going on quite
pretty nearly covered things. Why don't you check and look through any of these books and all, and then come and see me again.
Okay. Because one of the things that was really interesting to me in reading about the history of Logan County was the era of 1908 to 1920, where you had the Ku Klux Klan and there were lynchings and which are unpleasant but very interesting.
Yes. We had mob law back in the early days. I don't think that was Logan County altogether, because it was prevalent in a great deal of the South. In 1897, three white men were taken from the Begale in Russville and hanged on a tree just on the south side of the town, right here, almost in town. Then in 1908, four Negroes were hanged on the same tree. At that time, Rufus Browder was a Negro working on a farm here in Logan County. He and his boss got into an argument and Rufus killed him. Mm-hmm. Rufus was in jail, and they never did hang Rufus, but there were four Negroes for minor crimes in the jail, and the people aroused, came in and got them one night, and four of them were hanged. Mm. Well, then in the Ku Klux days, the Ku Klux were very active here. They had a strong group and they paraded and they had a park out here on the side of town. There were many of us who were quite disgusted with it. Mm-hmm. I never had anything to do with it. I was strongly opposed to it. Mm-hmm. But that was the way it was. But we are very, very pleased at the change in sentiment in Logan County after the run of the years. Mm-hmm. In 1954, when we had the school problem, you know. Our schools had been separate up until that time. Our schools were united here in Russellville and Logan County. There was no friction whatever. There was no violence. There was nothing of the kind. Mm-hmm. And we went right on, and the schools were integrated and are integrated today. And mm-hmm. we have an excellent school system here in mm-hmm. Russellville. It's commended and by people everywhere, and Standard has a very high rating. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have 5 county high schools at Auburn, at Adairville, at Lewisburg, at Chandler's Chapel, and at Armstead. Mm-hmm. Now, the people in those communities have a strong loyalty for their school. Mm-hmm. The school does mean a great deal to the local community. And I can see why they hate to give up their school. But the trend seems to be to have a united county school, but the people don't seem to want to. But we have 5 very good schools. 2 of them have been rated standard just within the last month or so. And I think 3 of them are all together. So I'm very, very proud of the fact that Logan County, which in 97 and 1908 was subject to mob violence, and in the 1920s had the Ku Klux demonstration, that in the 1950s it was able to integrate in its schools in a peaceful and acceptable and fine way, and I'm very, very proud of it.
That was in the 1950s that the schools were integrated. 54, they complied right away with the Supreme Court decision.
Oh yeah, we complied right away. Our mm-hmm. Negro school was closed.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall the in 1908 a feeling of sort of hysteria, of anti-black hysteria that led to the hanging of the 4?
Oh, there was, of course, some. There was possibly more out in the county than there was right here in town. But I don't recall any. We people here in Russellville, of course, were sorry to have things like that happen and mm-hmm. deplored it and all, but I don't know if there's any special hysteria or anything. We just mm-hmm. endured it. Uh-huh. And the Knight Riders, you know, there was in about 1900, there was quite a problem about the farmers and the tobacco, selling tobacco. And in 1908, the farmers came into Russellville and burned 3 tobacco warehouses here in town. And of course we deplored that, but nothing we could do about it. Mm-hmm. And we've just endured and gone on, and now we have the fine sentiment here, I think, that we do have. Of course, we are strong agricultural. I believe that the agricultural product of Logan County now is rated at $35 million, and the manufacturing part at $25 million. You see, we've had several of these small factories have come in here in recent years. Mm-hmm. We have Rockwell and Emerson and Carpenters. And we have now quite a large population of business people working in these factories. Mm-hmm.
Made a lot of notes last night in your book.
Well, why don't you get any book, any of these books anymore? Why don't you ask them that you see Alec Finley's history down there? Alec Finley was no writer. He couldn't write. His facts were good, and I'll tell you, my book was criticized. You know, when a new book comes out, well, you have critics and all, and, and I had some favorable criticism and some things about it that were not too favorable. One criticism was that I quoted Alec Finley too much. I quoted Finley, and Finley gave such excellent facts, and the people in Logan County knew of him and knew of his history and all, and I suppose I quoted him more than I should have. But if you get hold of a copy, I think they have it down there, a copy of Finley's history, and he didn't know how to condense his subjects right on. He'd tell about one period a while, and then he'd jump to something else, and then he'd come back to something else. And, you'll find that he was no writer at all. He was a printer, in fact. Worked in a printing office, and I think he worked in a printing office at Danville, Kentucky, probably.
And Mrs. Richardson just informed me that the revival movement of the 1820s began in near Russellville.
The 1900s began here in Logan County. The Red River Revival in the year 1800 was, there was a great revival period that spread through this section. There were three churches, Presbyterian churches, Red River, Muddy River, and Gaspar River. They all three. And that was the beginning of the camp meeting. They, in 1800, they began to come and in their wagons and spend several days, you know, camping and going to religious services in a tent. That was the way it was. Or in a church, if it was near a church building. But that was in the year 1800. Now, there may have been some revival activity in the 20s. I don't recall any special.
That's what I meant to say in the
1800s.
Well, I guess I can let you off the hook now. Turn this off.